I'm Susan Lube for Women's Focus, and today I'm talking to Secretary Retta Ward. Welcome.
Thank you, Susan. It's nice to be here.
And you are Secretary of Department of Health. The last time we talked, several years ago, you were Secretary of Department of Aging at that point. At the end of the conversation, we sort of both said that you really should be in health. We realized that, although you were very engaged in what you were doing at Department of Aging. So here you are in health, and you've been here for several years, and it seems as though you've kind of landed at just the right place.
Thank you, Susan. I think so. This is my passion. Public health has been my passion for many years. So I think it's a good fit.
Good. Well, I was really excited by the presentation that you made at LFC the other day. There were so many good efforts or good programs that you were bringing to presenting the budget. The one that was the most interesting was the teen pregnancy, or I guess we would just, maybe it's not just teens, but the effort to prevent unwanted pregnancy in New Mexico, which has been a problem.
Yes, so reducing teen births is one of our four super priorities, because we know if we can have a significant reduction in teen births, that it will have a broad range of impacts on quality of life indicators in New Mexico. And that's our mission at Department of Health, is we want to improve health status in every possible way that we can. And we know that teen births are a primary driver of generational poverty in New Mexico, and that if we can significantly reduce the teen birth rate, which we're number one in the nation for teen births, that's not an area where we want to be number one. If we can reduce teen births, it will affect a huge range of issues that we're trying to address and that Governor Martinez is trying to address in this state. Educational outcomes, economic outcomes. We know that children born to teen parents have poorer health outcomes. They're less likely to graduate from high school, as are the parents. They have higher incarceration rates, lower economic development outcomes. So if we can have success in this one area, we'll raise a whole bunch of health indicators in New Mexico.
Okay. There's some discussion that while we look at teen births, and that's something that is easy to monitor and it's easy to measure, that there has to be other things that happen too, because it's not actually the births that is the problem. It's that the subsequent not getting jobs and not getting enough education perhaps, and that without some jobs, that just reducing the births isn't going to do anything.
You're absolutely right, Susan. In fact, New Mexico's teen birth rate, and we're talking about 15 to 19-year-olds, the last figures that we have show in 2014 that there were 2,600 births to that age demographic. And we know, based on the costs of that to the state in terms of Medicaid, other public assistance, that those 2,600 births cost about $73 million over time.
And what, sort of break that down.
So it's in, most of these births are covered by Medicaid. Many of these young families need public assistance long term. Some of these children end up incarcerated. So when you look at all of the combined costs, it's enormous to our society. Not to mention that we can't even put a dollar cost on the human loss in terms of productivity, educational outcomes. So we know that there are enormous gains to be made in this area.
Okay. Are you working with some of the other departments that work on some of the other issues that teens may be facing? For instance, job insecurity or education, wanting to make sure that they have something that they are able to strive for?
Yes, that's really important. We're working with Human Services Department. We're working with public education, children, youth, and families. They have a big role to play in all of this. So our goal is very ambitious. We're hoping to reduce teen births by 50% in 4 years. That's an enormously ambitious project, but we know it's realistic and that we can do this. Colorado had great success in reducing its teen birth rate and a corresponding decline in abortion rates as well. by doing an ambitious program primarily built around making available long-acting reversible contraceptives to women. Because we know nationwide that low-income teens and young women don't have as great access to the most effective forms of birth control as more affluent teens and young women do. So we want to make sure that economics is not a barrier to teens and young women getting the most effective kind of birth control available.
Okay. I think the key word is making available there, because there's also concern that low-income girls mostly could be pushed into methods of contraception that they're not comfortable with. And I looked back this morning at the information that Colorado had given, and they talked about, I think they talked about spreading the word by word of mouth and sort of going slowly. So has there been talking about that? I think the idea is that you bring your sister is the one who brings you in.
You've made a very good point. And there are many ways to communicate. And certainly we don't want any teen or young woman to feel pressured into using a birth control method that they don't want. We just want to make sure everybody has equal access to the information and to the opportunity. If they want the best birth control method, they should have it. And that's what we want. So we'll be looking at a number of methods of communication. We're looking at training providers so that they understand what the best methods are for teens and young women, and just making sure that everybody has equal access to that.
Okay, so let's break it down. What are the steps going to be that so that a teen will have a different experience when she goes to, I guess, a public health clinic or wherever she goes?
Well, we have 54 public health clinics around the state. We also have some school-based health centers that do reproductive services. And so one of the impediments to getting the most effective birth control methods sometimes is that they're more expensive up front. Mm-hmm. Some of them cost, $300 to $700. And so some providers may not stock them. Mm-hmm. So it would require two visits for a teen to go in to request it, and then if the provider doesn't have it, they have to go back. We know we'll lose some teens if they have to make two visits. So one of the things that we plan to do through private-public partnerships is to make sure that these devices are stocked so that a teen doesn't have to make two visits, so that if they want it, it's available the first time that they come in.
Okay. How long have you been planning this, and when can we expect to see changes?
So we've been planning this throughout the year, and we'll have the official program up and going within a few months. And we'll have some results probably by the end of next year. So that's very exciting. And, we're marketing this as a delayed parenthood project. We want anybody who wants to be a parent to have that opportunity, but we want it to occur at a time in their lives when they're prepared for it, when they can be great parents, and so that it doesn't derail their opportunities for education, jobs, things that improve quality of life, not only for the parents, but for the children as well.
Is there money involved? Is it all going to be paid by Medicaid, or what is the mechanism?
There'll be multiple mechanisms, Susan. So we're looking for private foundation money. We're trying to raise $3.2 million a year to kickstart this program so that it can then be sustainable over time. Because it does cost money to do something like this, but the return on investment is great. We estimate that for every dollar that we spend on this project, $6 will be saved. That's an enormous return on investment.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten feedback from doctors, from providers, and other people who will be working with the project?
We have, and we'll continue to get feedback, and we're also going to be doing some training and education for our providers, because there are some providers that don't understand fully the benefits of long-acting reversible contraceptives. So there's some education that needs to be done, and we're going to be providing that and giving everybody the opportunity to have the information they need, not only to provide the services, but to get the information out there to young women who may need this information. We also are going to be using something called reproductive life plan coaching. Children should not be accidents. We want people to know that they need to plan their reproductive life. And we want young men to be involved in this as well. We want them to take responsibility along with the women in their lives.
And how will that take place? Will this be in the schools, around the school-based clinics, or the dinner table, or what?
Well, there are lots of different ways for this. I just saw a really innovative campaign, a media campaign, that was targeted at young men. It was funny. It was compelling. So we're still working out the details on that, but we want to make sure that young men are involved in this because they share responsibility in reproductive life planning, and we want to make sure that they're a part of it.
Colorado ran into or had a really successful program, it seems, and they certainly were enthusiastic when they made their presentation here, but they ran into some barriers in the state. So are you anticipating some pushback, or have you already had any of that, or what's the plan for that?
You know, we have not had any pushback to date. I think that most people in this state recognize that this is a long-standing issue in New Mexico that is preventing us from reaching our potential in terms of health, education, and economic outcomes. So we've received wide-ranging support. The governor's office is very supportive of this because it addresses many of the governor's key initiatives: education, economics, health outcomes. They're all wrapped up in this one issue. So we have not received pushback. We're prepared to deal with that if we do. We're not forcing anybody into this, but we would just want to make sure everybody who wants the best contraceptive method available has it.
Okay. When you say you're prepared to deal with it, do you have arguments ready, or do you have spokespeople, or how are you prepared?
You know, we do have information available because there are misconceptions about birth control in general. We understand that, some people think that abstinence is the only thing that's appropriate for teenagers, and they're certainly entitled to that opinion. But some teenagers are not going to choose that, and for teenagers who don't choose to be abstinent, we want to make sure that they're not forced into parenthood as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Are you looking at teens who are already parents and postponing a second child?
Yes, in fact, that's a really key part of this because many teen parents do have a second child within a relatively short period of time. So we will be targeting those teens as well. We're targeting initially 13 geographic regions in the state that have the highest teen birth rates or the highest number of births, like in Bernalillo County. And so we're going to focus on those areas first, and then we'll be moving out to other parts of the state as well.
Okay. How about the fundraising, the foundation fundraising? Are you confident that you're going to be able to pull that off too? That's a big job.
It is a big job, but you know, the foundations that we have been working with, we don't have firm commitments for funding yet, but they all recognize the value of this. That if we can make great strides in reducing teen pregnancy, it can change the landscape of New Mexico in a very profound way. So there's great excitement about this project because the potential for improvements in health outcomes, educational outcomes, economic outcomes is enormous.
Yeah, okay. Are other states or national organizations looking at us the way they looked at Colorado?
Well, I don't know yet. I haven't been contacted by anybody nationally, and we don't have results yet. So I think we'll be contacted once we have results, and I anticipate we're going to have really outstanding results.
Okay. Let's step back for a minute and step back into your background. As I said, you and I both talked when you were at the Agency on Aging, but tell us a little bit more about where you're coming from.
Well, my background is in public health. I have a master's in public health. I worked briefly for the Arizona Department of Health Services. I was a health educator in Albuquerque Public Schools. I was a strong advocate of comprehensive sexuality education because I saw the need for it every day in the work that I did. So I have a long-standing passion for the power of primary prevention, and that's really what this is. We're looking at giving all young people an equal opportunity to have a bright future. And we know that being a teen parent derails a lot of young people from reaching their potential.
Mm-hmm. And you grew up in New Mexico, in southern New Mexico, right?
I did. I grew up in Hagerman. Yes, I did.
That's It's hard to imagine. When you made the presentation at LFC of the budget and the plans for the Department of Health, you said you weren't going to ask for any increase in funding. And HSD is asking for a really big increase, and Department of Corrections is kind of begging for an increase. And you got some feedback from the legislators saying you're not, no increase. So tell me your philosophy about that.
So we're not asking for any funding for this program, because we're looking for the private foundation money to be the extra funding that we need for this. So we think with that and the money that we already put into reproductive health, that we'll have plenty of money to get this going and to sustain it over time. So we're looking to be very cost effective with this, and we think it's doable.
Okay. But how about the budget in general? I know that you said that there was going to be $1 million more for sexual assault, but you were going to handle that without asking for a bigger budget increase.
And so we have asked for a slight increase. It's a very small increase to take care of some areas where we have increased costs. But overall, it's basically a flat budget.
Okay. But you're going to be able to pull from other places and get that money for sexual assault?
So I don't have all that worked out right now. I'm not prepared to answer that today, but we will meet the commitments that we have made.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask was about that you're changing the health offices to wellness centers. You talked about that. So what's that all about? Let me just say that I really like that we have the health offices, but they're not places that you really want to go. I think of them as sort of sitting there and waiting for a long time and things like that.
Well, that's an interesting observation, Susan. And, you know, this is in connection with our super priorities, reducing teen births, one of those. The other three super priorities that we have are decreasing obesity, decreasing type 2 diabetes, and decreasing substance misuse, including tobacco, alcohol, prescription opiates, heroin, all of those things, because we know that if we can have a significant reduction in obesity, type 2 diabetes, and substance misuse, we'll address virtually all chronic diseases in this state, virtually all of them. Hmm. So if we're going to be able to do that, we have to change the focus of our public health offices. We want them to be wellness and prevention oriented. Doesn't mean we're going to get rid of all the clinical services that we have provided in the past, but it just means that if we're really going to make breakthrough changes in health status, we have to do business differently. We want these 54 public health offices to be centers of wellness, centers of excellence, where they are resources for their communities to improve health status. We're still in the process of reinventing them, but you're absolutely right. We want them to be places where people are attracted to go to find out how they can improve their lives and the lives of the people in their community. So we have some work to do in that area.
Are you going to need money?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it is just looking at how we use our resources and aligning our resources to meet our priorities. There are always going to be more needs than there are resources. Mm-hmm. So we have to look at every dollar we spend and say, what are we going to get from spending this money? What are going to be the best possible outcomes? How can we best use the resources we have to align with the improved health status outcomes that we want?
Okay. It would seem to me that, especially in dealing with diabetes and some of the other chronic illnesses that you were talking about, that having the expansion of Medicaid would be valuable for doing that, having adults be able to qualify for Medicaid. Have you had a chance to see the results of expansion of Medicaid to adults yet?
Well, certainly we have more people enrolled in Medicaid. I don't think we have data yet in terms of actual improved health outcomes to this point, but it certainly is important, and the Affordable Care Act has an increased focus on prevention and wellness, which certainly enhances our ability to get improvements in health status. So it's a little early for us to see actual decreases in type 2 diabetes, but we will be looking at things like decreases in hospitalizations related to type 2 diabetes, that kind of thing. So Yes, Medicaid will help with that, but the primary prevention work still is going to take place mainly outside of the health care system. And that's where we're the experts in terms of developing great wellness and primary prevention throughout the state.
When I last saw you, you were starting off doing something with Indian Pueblos. You were at the Department of Aging, but you were working especially on health issues with various Pueblos. And I wondered if you had been able to establish that kind of working together partnership.
Absolutely. And we have a liaison that works with all of the tribes and Pueblos in New Mexico. Our Healthy Kids, Healthy Communities program is in several of the tribal areas, and it's expanding this year. The Healthy Kids program is a childhood obesity prevention program, and we're having great success with that.
Great.
New Mexico was one of a few states in the nation that had a significant decrease in third grade obesity.
Oh.
So we're very excited about that, and we are increasing the availability of that program throughout the state, including in tribal lands.
Wow, that's great. That's great to hear. The Department of Health is the biggest agency in terms of, I guess, people. I'm not sure that it's the biggest budget, but it's a lot to head up and it's a lot to control. So how are things going with that and what's your philosophy about it?
It is the biggest department in terms of people. We're not the biggest in budget, but we are the largest and I think probably the most complex department in state government. And the key to running a department like this is you have to hire other great leaders. And we have a great leadership staff, the best people I've ever worked with.
Really?
They are dedicated, passionate, talented, and we're working on having breakthrough changes. So we have a great strategic plan. We're developing great strategy execution plans, which is the key to making things happen. So I'm confident that we have the right people in place to make big changes happen in Mexico.
Okay. When will we know whether the reducing teen pregnancy effort has had any effect? What will we see?
Well, we'll be able to see over the next year, we'll be able to see decreases in the number of births to 15 to 19-year-olds. We'll also be able to see reductions in the numbers of abortions. So we'll have information by the end of the next calendar year on the success that we're having.
And do you expect to release those reports? Or in the past, the Department of Health has done a strategy planning that they've put into a booklet form. It's been very helpful in following it. And so what will we actually see?
Yes, we'll make some public announcements about the successes that we have. Absolutely.
Okay, good. Oh, the other thing, one of the problems with long-acting birth control is STIs, realizing that they won't be controlled by this mechanism and you still have to use condoms and things. And I noticed in Colorado they saw that there wasn't a decrease in use of condoms and in STIs. But how are you going to be dealing with that problem?
That's a really important point, Susan, because other than condoms, no birth control method is preventative against STIs. Mm-hmm. So we'll be recommending to any woman or teen who uses any form of birth control other than condoms, that condoms should be used secondarily as a method of preventing sexually transmitted infections. That's an important message. That's also part of the important message for males, that they have a responsibility in not only preventing contraception, but also in preventing sexually transmitted infections. So it's an important message.
One of the things that Colorado talked about was supporting decisions, was teaching in deciding whether to use the long-term contraceptive or not, was supporting decision-making rather than supporting actually choosing and having the decision made by the woman or the girl. And I thought that was a nice way of looking at it.
It is, because, this is a really important decision for teens and young women. And they should have full information so that they can make the decision. No one should be making this decision for anyone else. Mm-hmm. But everybody should have equal access to good information.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Well, we wish you luck. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate having the opportunity to talk to you today.